Forest Avengers Follow the White Rabbit is a podcast dedicated to practical politics. Practical politics is, of course, called practical politics because it is all non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is always rule-based politics, every 2 years, every 4 years. It's basically what you do at the voting booth. And then there is full-spectrum practical politics, or engaging and taking down an opponent by any means necessary, using the rules but never breaking the rules. But to do anything, we have to start with practical politics, and in this case, it's the art of staying on message. It's having a consistent message. And our consistent message is the mantra, or white rabbit genocide, you see on this front page. And we will also, in this podcast, engage in the geopolitical. We will talk about geopolitical events. We will talk about things from a unique white rabbit perspective. We will also go into white rabbit psychology and ecology and talk about everything you'd want to know about the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. And this is, again, the Horus the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. We'll start this by going over some news events. There's a funny story that's coming out of Russia. And I'll read this to you by Andrew Osborne. And this is the smh.com.au. And that's the Sydney Morning Herald. Let's see here. Modern Matahari leaves Kremlin critics exposed, by Andrew Osborne. Written on April 29th, 2010. Moscow, she has piercing blue eyes, a girl next door face, and likes to do a little amateur modeling. Yet according to those who have fallen for her charms, Ekaterina Gerasimova is also the Kremlin's most effective secret agent and a latter-day Matahari. Her mission, it is claimed, is to discredit prominent Kremlin critics by luring them into compromising situations using vintage KGB honey trap techniques, offering her body, sex, and drugs from cocaine to marijuana as an inducement. Katya, as she is usually known, has tried and often succeeded in betting at least a half a dozen high-profile Kremlin critics and other political figures. The damage to reputations has varied from serious to negligible, depending on her victim's marital status and response. Her latest scalp was Viktor Shenderovich, a journalist and a scriptwriter on Russia's former version of spitting image television satire. Mr. Shenderovich, who is married and has a daughter, admits he slept with Ms. Gerasimova, but claims he was set up by the Kremlin. His credibility as an authoritative critic of the Prime Minister Putin appears to have been at least partly dented, and his marriage is reportedly in trouble. The editor of Russian Newsweek magazine also fell under Miss Gerasimova's spell and was filmed in his underpants chopping up what looked like cocaine after having sex. A clutch of anti-Kremlin opposition figures and activists, including a man resembling the leader of the National Bolshevik Party, has also been caught in flagrant delicto. But unlike Soviet times, when the Secret Service used compromising material to blackmail, Ms. Gerasimova's exploits have been widely publicized in grainy videos on the internet. The footage is often accompanied by mocking music and subtitles. It has taken a few weeks for the victims to realize that they have all been set up by the same woman. Yet little is known about Ms. Gerasimova. Beyond that, she is in her 20s and has registered an online modeling agency nicknamed Moomoo. After the surname, she uses a social networking site. Men said she used different first names and was highly persistent in her advances. Some of the men said they knew something was wrong when she suddenly produced drugs, or in one case, asked a young opposition leader to join her and a female friend in experimenting with a large selection of sex toys. She now seems to have disappeared, but at least one other prominent Kremlin critic has said he expects a similar video featuring himself and the woman to reach the internet soon. And this has made the news internationally, that Kremlin critics are just falling for this honey trap and ending up on the internet night and day. She's just lining them up and knocking them down, causing marriages are splitting up and reputations are destroyed. This is some high pro Russian Newsweek. That's funny stuff, and she is very, very good looking. Very good looking. But that's coming out from old Pooty Poot. Set them up and knock them down by any means necessary. Send out your honey traps. Let's see here. Russia asserts itself in its near abroad. This is Wall Street Journal. April 24th. I hear lots of talk in the U.S. that the Cold War is over. It might be for America, but certainly not for Pooty Poot, says Georgia's President Mikhail Saakashvili. during an office visit this week. Let's see. On Wednesday, Russia paid off Ukraine with cheaper natural gas to extend lease of its Black Sea fleet. And there's a bunch of stuff going on with Ukraine. Same old, Russia's moving on with its program and his, and his backdoor policy, making sure all of its neighbors come in and do business. And there's an interesting article by a man, he's an author named Nikolai Starkov. And it's Nikolai Starkov, Nikolay Starkov. It's called Russia and Poland, Battle for the Future. Pretty interesting article on what Russia wants from Poland and why Poland is having to do business with Russia, simply because of the decline of the Anglo elite. The Anglo elite was Poland's patron, and patron has played both sides of this, or Poland has played both sides of this, and now it's trapped between Germany and Russia. It talks about Russia more so than Germany, but they're having to do business with Moscow, and it's pretty uncomfortable feeling off for them, and Moscow's making demands. The Kremlin is not a charitable organization, he writes. It wants the following things from Poles to be done. Cut off the anti-Russian hysteria, economic contracts, help and clean up among minor NATO members. It goes on to say that they basically have more in common now than ever, and that things should be able to be worked out between them, which I would expect too. It doesn't talk about German soft power, but, you know, that's the way that goes. Let's see here. Putty Poot had a big week this week. On Thursday, April 29th, you have all the photos of Putin tags polar bear in Russia's Arctic. I mean, this guy's always tagging something somewhere in the world. You know, he's shooting a polar bear and then tagging it. He's quite the wildlife man. It's funny stuff. Let's see what the London papers say about this. Telegraph UK. Tough guy Vladimir Putty Poot caresses polar bear. You'll see photos of him outdoors fishing or, you know, basically tagging wild animals, part of these wildlife expeditions with these generally scientists of some kind. Mr. Putin donned Arctic gear and caressed the anesthetized wild polar bear when taking part in a bid to weigh and fix a collar to it during his visit to the Russian archipelago of Franz Josef Land. Oh, interesting. And we have a big election over here in Hungary, which is right near Russia, all in the Eastern Europe area. The center-right party wins Hungary vote. And there are several, most of the Eastern Europe, especially Hungary, is becoming more nationalistic by the day. And there is and the name of the party is, of course, Jobbik, the famous Hungary nationalist party, and the Jew rabbits were all up in arms over Jobbik, and Jobbik, I don't know exactly what they did in the election, but they're polling huge numbers, and so we're moving quite along with the far right, and the whole entire right wing is moving more toward blatantly racial nationalistic type politics. In Ukraine also had a big blow up. Yanukovych reversed the Ukraine position on the Holodomor famine. And what he did was he expanded it, that it wasn't just the Ukrainian people, but it was Slavs of all kinds, Russians that were also killed by Stalin's totalitarian regime. He did a very good job. He didn't go so far as to, you know, blaming Putin nowadays for that is a little ridiculous, but he did include a lot of Russians, let's face it, a lot of Russian Christians, a lot of Slavs, a lot of Belarusians, all suffered in these famines of some type. And he expanded that, which is interesting. He didn't name the Jews, but he came pretty close. And, of course, the big blow-up in the Ukraine was Ukraine's extension of Russia's base lease may challenge U.S. goals in the region. And this is Washington Post, April 28th, and it caused a huge brouhaha. Chaos erupts in Ukraine parliament, and they were fighting over this and all kinds of stuff like that. They didn't want to extend Russia's base in the Ukraine. Russia's in that Black Sea region, and that's their warm water port. And of course, they own Ukraine now. They own Ukraine now, like everyone else, and they're like everyone else in the area. They're just tightening the ropes, and of course, they're all playing along. There's no reason not to. It's not like they're shooting people or anything else, and they're working out deals right and left and center. And of course, Washington is going out of its ways to cause problems in Poland. It will go out of its ways to cause problems in Ukraine. It will go out of its ways to cause problems everywhere. Coming back over to Anglosphere, we have in the UK more sniping comments about the Popey Pope. Foreign Office makes apology to Pope after officials mock memo about Benedict's brand condoms. The Pope supposedly coming there. Let's see. So the document also proposed that the Pope might sing a duet with the Queen to raise money for charity. The memo, which has dismayed church leaders in Britain, and there's trying to start problems, of course, as is the Mail Online. And let's see another one. Ministers apologize for insult to Pope. The government has apologized to the Pope over official documents that mocked his forthcoming visit to Britain by suggesting he should bless a gay marriage and even launch papal brand condoms. And this is the Telegraph UK. This is the same old we've been talking about. And the elections are heating up in, of course, the UK, and Gordon Brown just stuck his foot in his mouth. He was talking to an ordinary voter, and she asked him something about, she tackled him on immigration. And for the Sun, the actual headline says, she's not a bigot, and he's not clever. But basically, she did a Joe the Plumber in America. Joe the Plumber was someone that shot off his mouth and asked a politician a direct question on camera, and the politician being President Obama, before he was president, he had a tough time with it a little bit, and he rung around, and he kept on, and Joe the Plumber kept after him. But Gillian Duffy is her name, and she shook hands with PM Gordon Brown and asked him about immigration. And then he turned around, he did some typical political type thing, and then he turned around and actually called her a bigot, and she couldn't really hear him. But the cameras could, and so it kind of got him in trouble. And he made a mistake criticizing her, they say, but it's kind of a political scandal. He looks like an idiot, like all politicians do. You know, he basically spoke his mind. He didn't care about her. It's not racist to talk about immigration, he insists. He's backpedaling. Let's see, back over in America. Goldman traders email slur. Goldman Sachs is taking heat, the likes of which they have not, maybe ever. Blankfein, or however you pronounce it. Jew rabbit, I'm guessing. Odds are. Was sitting and testifying on Capitol Hill all week about his about Goldman Sachs raping and pillaging in the mortgage fraud business. And I mean, they were taking a beating, and they have taken a beating, an absolute beating, with Senator Carl Levin, another Jew rabbit, who basically said that they were selling shitty deals. He actually used the S word in the Senate chamber. He's swearing in the Senate chamber. That might be the first time that happened on record. You know, he said, you're selling shitty deals. But it's more heat than I've seen Goldman take in a long, long time. And for America, it's pretty profound. And of course, we have the latest poll that comes out. MSNBC publishes 78% don't trust big government. Trust numbers rarely go this low. I can't believe there's 22% that trust the government. That's what I can't believe. Let's come on over to America here and see what we got in America. They're talking up Iran here. And they're going to be talking up Iran more and more. Let's see here. They're talking about, we're talking about new military hardware, hyper-fast missile to hit anywhere in an hour. Some type of Times Online ran this, and there wasn't a lot of talk about this in America, but abroad there were. U.S. officials have sought to reassure Russia and Chinese authorities that the new weapons will be developed in small numbers. It's a kinetic kill weapon they're developing, something that goes Mach 5. Mach 5, it goes so fast, it launches from space. It's called Prompt Global Strike System. It's a non-nuclear system that they can hit anywhere in the world with a kinetic kill, and it's obviously going so fast. It's from such a high area, from such a high plateau, namely outer space, that it's a devastating type of weapon. They're talking about this, and of course everyone else is you know, you sign a nuclear weapons deal and then you start talking about bringing stuff like this out. And that's been the military scandals of the week. Obama's efforts to placate Moscow and Beijing have been criticized by U.S. arms control hawks. Dean Chang, a China specialist at the Conservative Heritage Foundation, accused the administration of pursuing a strategically incoherent policy. And Times Online covered that. I don't know exactly if they're going to bring this out or if they're in the policy to bring this out. It's just basically a big precision hypersonic type weapon. And they also, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, launched a test flight of a prototype labeled the Hypersonic Technological Vehicle 2, known as the Falcon. It basically looked like some type of space shuttle. Of course, they didn't say what it was over. They didn't say what it was going to do other than it could launch emergency satellites in a moment's notice if America was at war and had to launch emergency satellites in space. So they're doing all kinds of interesting things across the board. But when it comes to Iran, there's been stuff going out about U.S. military suffers major defeat in Korangal Valley and forced to retreat. U.S. military has retreated from a base in the remote Korangal Valley, Afghanistan, after spending over 4 years trying to hold the ground. The U.S. forces even negotiate the terms of their defeat. They're having a problem in Afghanistan. It's not really coming out, or it's coming out in pieces. Of course, what else is new? And this was by James Cercello. U.S. military suffers major defeat in Korangal Valley, forced to retreat. James Cercello, C-I-R-C-E-L-L-O. And he goes over what's really going on. And he quotes one of the executive officers of 2nd Battalion, realistically, no one needs to be there. And this is outposts they're giving up. They're giving up land, I guess. Not a good way to fight a war, giving up land, but I don't understand what the long-term objectives are there, other than nation building, which they know is not going to work. Let's go over to Iran. Now on to Iran. Walter Russell Mead, the American Interest Online, thinking the unthinkable, war with Iran. Do not even think about bombing Iran, wrote Michael O'Hanlon and Bruce Rydell in yesterday's Financial Times, pointing out that the U.S. has two unpopular and unfinished wars in the region already, and that damage from any military strikes on the Islamic Republic would be unlikely to do enough damage to its nuclear program to justify military and political costs, and also that Iran would have many opportunities to retaliate against U.S. interests in the region. They urged President Obama to take this option off the table completely. Living with a nuclear Iran won't be fun, but it's better than the alternative, so let's start making plans for the inevitable. I actually agree with O'Hanlon and Reid that the military strikes against Iranian nuclear program aren't likely to get us anywhere good, but that doesn't mean we can't stop thinking about them. 61% of Americans called Iran's strength a critical threat in a Gallup poll last month. An additional 29% said the Iranian threat was important, with 90% of the public feeling threatened by Iran. At a moment when nothing special was happening, it's not clear to me that the domestic politics will allow the Obama administration to steer clear of hostilities with Iran, even if it wants to. Maybe it's a consequence of the Bush administration. We seem to be assuming that America can opt out of war if the White House can just keep its cool. I wish that were true, but history suggests that it isn't. President McKinley wanted to stay out of Spain's war in Cuba. He didn't succeed. President Madison didn't want a war with Great Britain, but the War of 1812 came all the same. Woodrow Wilson hoped to stay out of World War I. The last thing President Truman wanted was a war in Korea, and Lyndon Johnson felt trapped by the war in Vietnam. President Obama clearly doesn't want a war with Iran, and for what it's worth, neither do I. It's the second time this guy has said that. But if history teaches anything, it's that you can't always get what you want. It's unfortunately rather easy to think of circumstances that could force the Obama administration into war it would rather avoid. Here's a scenario. Without asking American permission, the Israelis launch attacks on Iran that bloody the regime's nose, and while they don't destroy the nuclear program, they do expose the regime's inability to defend its airspace against the hated Zionist foe. Not believing U.S. denials or really caring whether they are true to distract public attention at home and abroad from its military failures against the hated Zionists, and to capitalize on the perceived opportunity to pose as the leader of Islamic resistance to the Crusader Zionist alliance, Iran retaliates against U.S. interests, firing on our ships in the Gulf, for example, or openly attacking American forces in Iraq and or Afghanistan. Could President Obama turn the other cheek, or would he have to respond? And where would a cycle of tit-for-tat retaliations end up? Now, let me interject. This is precisely what they're doing. They're trying to triangulate on the scenarios that will make war inevitable. And I'm guessing, I've been guessing for, you know, everyone's known for quite a while that it is inevitable. I just don't know how or when. And then I'll keep reading. There are other scenarios that end up with the U.S. and Iran with daggers drawn. There are signs that the mullahs overestimate their clout and underestimate America's ability to confront them. In the past, Iranian radical factions have turned up the temperature in the U.S.-Iranian relationship in order to improve their political standing at home. Calling on Iranians to unite against the foreign menace has worked before, isolating moderates. And he goes on to basically say the United States generally does not want war with Iran, but if Iran attacks American forces or American interests, that will change. He thinks it'll set off some kind of Jacksonian rage that followed Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor. Wonderful. And they're basically trying to triangulate and talk about all the different situations where Obama doesn't want war, but he's going to be forced down his throat. The Obama administration quite rightly does not want a war with Iran. It does not want to contribute unnecessarily to a crisis atmosphere. I don't think Washington should rattle its sabers and issue hot-headed threats that hasn't worked in the past, and there's no reason to think it will now. But there are cool and quiet ways of communicating the truth that for its own sake, as well as ours, Iranian leaders must never forget that attack on forces of the United States would be an act of suicidal folly. But we should not be so polite as so low-key that they miss the main point. Kaiser Wilhelm II, Hirohito, and Hitler all made the same mistake. They underestimated how relentless and how powerful an enemy the United States would be. We must not let Iran repeat their mistake. This guy's talking out both sides of his mouth. He knows that the Israelis or someone's going to do something to get the Taliban into war. And it'll probably be a disaster. Maybe Israeli attacks them, and then Iran just surprises the world and absolutely positively tees off on Israel. Forget U.S. forces. Although I'm sure they'll tee off on them, but I mean really tease off on Israel. Really tease off on all on Israel first before turning that firepower on U.S. warships or maybe all of the above. And really shocks the world and how ready they are for this thing. And then Obama basically doesn't know what to do and doesn't respond, and the whole thing goes up in flames. Let's face it, if you wait too long in any type of war situation and don't allow the U.S. Navy or U.S. military to respond, or they get surprised at Iran's retaliation capabilities, you can only imagine. It has debacle written all over it. Especially if Israeli launches an attack, which I think they will do. Christian Science Monitor, sanctions on Iran's gasoline imports. That's war talk. Congress is moving quickly to force Obama into blocking gasoline sales to Iran over its nuclear ambitions. A U.S. naval blockade is the only real way to enforce that, and from Iran's point of view, that means war. Yeah, they may try to push Iran into acting. I doubt it, though, because Iran has gets enough gas elsewhere, especially from Russia. But we'll have to see. We'll have to see what they do. Israeli raid on Iran would start years of war. This is New York Israel Conflict Examiner, Richard Shulman. This is published in Examiner.com Detroit. Suppose the U.S. leaves it to Israel to knock out Iran's nuclear arms facilities. If Israel were to attack Iran's oil facilities, the world would certainly condemn Israel. No kidding. And it's talking about the epic battle that could take place and leave Israel into asymmetrical warfare type situation for a year to come. I have a feeling it would be all massive missiles hitting Israel, and there will be big surprises. I'm guessing Iran or someone else via proxy for Iran will deliver big surprises. It's just a gut feeling here. Ron Paul opposes Iran's sanctions. Yeah, Texas straight talk. He's saying they should get out of there and leave him alone. Of course, it makes sense. Get out of there and leave everyone alone and go back to America's policy prior to the Civil War. the post-Civil War, we do nothing but war. Iran unveils air defense system as U.S. defense policy. At Iran's annual Army Day parade, various air defenses and missile systems are displayed and touted. U.S. officials responding to a leaked memo say Iran policy is not being reassessed. They're basically showing off their air defense. Now, I don't think their air defense can hold, but I don't know what they have. I think they're going to destroy each other, but I think the retaliation would be a lot more than anyone can think they're currently capable of. And it will be a wild ride to watch the opening scenes and how the U.S. gets sucked in or what the Taliban does. They're between the Anglo elites or between a rock and a hard place. What do you do when someone's defying you like that continuously? And the Jews can't stand it. They can't stand it. And I'm sure that the Israelis could hit them, could do something to protect themselves against it. But Iran, I do not believe, will start it in any way, shape, manner, or form. They may provoke something, but they're not going to actually start the shooting. They're calling it the Iran system as the S-200 system. Defend against large aerial attacks, including those by high-speed and high-altitude aircraft. Moscow continues to delay delivery of its S-300 mobile missile defense batteries, which Iran has purchased. Who knows? They may have some of those already. Over the weekend, Tehran paraded improved long-range missiles that could easily hit Israel and anti-cruise ship missiles that could easily be used against U.S. ships in the Persian Gulf. It also unveiled new mobile tactical radar systems. They have those Russian Sunbird missiles that they hide in the mountains and that they can shower down on ships. And those Sunbird missiles are pretty much aircraft carrier killers if they can get near them, if they can hit one with it. They have to have all kinds of brilliant contingents, asymmetrical contingents for taking out stuff. I'm interested to see how many missiles they throw at Israel and how crazy it becomes in the first day. First 72 hours will be critical. Let's see here. Fox News reporting, U.S. Navy reports close encounter with Iranian jet. The aircraft came as close as 1,000 yards to the USS Eisenhower in the strategic Strait of Hormuz, a U.S. military official said. Here we go. We're on our way almost. One of those encounters is going to go over the line and it'll be done. And let's move over to back to America and let's talk about the immigration issue. Mexico issues travel warning for Arizona over law. Yeah, Mexicans can't travel to Arizona now. Arizona cracked down and basically said if you're illegal, we're throwing you out of the state or throwing you out of the country. Now, this is pretty much a common sense law, but now, of course, it's a big deal. What happens when white rabbits start standing up for themselves? You're going to get a big outcry, and they're going to start hissing and moaning and crying and panting. Like, for instance, if someone took a stand and told the black rabbits no, or now they're telling the Mexican rabbits that the speckly brown rabbits and the non-white rabbits feel like the show is almost over for them. So now they're starting to really, really panic. And trying to figure out how to approach this. But what's happening is the indigenous white rabbits of Europe are going into what we will call bear management mode. You know, the black bears in New Jersey are a problem. Everyone starts realizing it because we've shared the problem. Yeah, no one's excluded from this problem. Everyone's got the same problem. Doesn't matter if you're rich in Arizona, you got the problem. Doesn't matter if you're poor in California, you got the problem. Doesn't matter if you're in Maine, you got a problem. And since we all got the same problem all over the world, and we could extend this to Britain everywhere else, they're going into bear management mode. And bear management mode is when they start basically pushing back, saying this is how it's going to be, and this is how it's going to be. And when they say this is how it's going to be, the bears get all upset because they're used to being fed. And that's what's happening. And then, of course, Mexico is backtracking and acknowledging migrant abuse, pledges changes, but they'll never change. And Mexico is issuing another travel warning. And they're talking about we need immigration reform, and they don't really know what to do because no one's used to white rabbits standing up and saying no. what happens is you sit there and you negatively condition the white rabbits and tell them these immigrants are so wonderful and speckly brown rabbits are so wonderful and lovely and diversity is our strength and getting kidnapped in Arizona. You know, Arizona is like a Mexican kidnap capital. Some of these cities like Phoenix, the Mexican drug gangs are up there kidnapping people and stuff like that. Things that never happened in America. Things that haven't happened in America, you know, these South American kidnapping stories. And so they're sitting there talking about how wonderful these people are, and of course there's a massive amount of negative conditioning. I've talked about this. And sooner or later it backfires. When it starts backfiring, the white rabbits just don't want to hear anything else, just get the hell out of here, go home, or else. And what's funny about it is how many Mexicans, Mexican-American, actual legal citizens, support kicking out Mexicans. Why? Well, they don't want their deal to end. And what they're doing is the indigenous white rabbits of Europe are coming into bear management mode. There's a problem with the black bears in New Jersey. Everyone knows it, and they've got to be dealt with. They got to be put on their own and go back to non-interference. How they get from one to the other is interesting. But as they stand up, as they start standing up more and more, other groups will become more and more desperate and not know what to do because they're used to the indigenous white rabbits of Europe giving them all kinds of carrots and stuff like that, and they're starting to crack down. And they don't know what to do because really they're powerless. You know, white rabbits have power inherent. They got Godzilla. You get out Godzilla, they'll clean up that border in no time. You can ship them all home if you feel like it. She'll do that for you. But until then, you know, the indigenous white rabbits of Europe have the luxury of acting weak. In my next segment, I'm going to talk about how the brown shirts all have brown skin. All these Nazi worshippers are non-white now. Most of the world worships Nazis and worship Adolf Hitler, but they worship strength. The indigenous white rabbits of Europe, we have the luxury of appearing weak and giving all these things away because we have Godzilla. We can, in a blink of an eye, kick them out of here. It's not really the right way to go about it, but we have that luxury. Most other groups don't have that luxury. That's why they worship the Hitlers, because he got up and he kicked out the foreigners, and that's what they'd like to do. You know, whether it be the Pakistanis that worship Hitler or the Mongolians. I'll go into this next. The brown shirts all wear brown skin, but indigenous white rabbits of Europe, we got Godzilla. We can get up in the blink of an eye and change things overnight. And when they want to change things, when white rabbits want to change things, they do change things overnight. But as they start making the stand, and the best way to do it is always on the consistent message, many of these groups aren't going to know what hit them because they're used to being, they're used to white rabbits rolling over and giving them things, and now they see that the party's over. And that's when the panic starts, and Mexico's backtracking, the White House doesn't know what to do. Well, elements of the White House don't know what to do. But they are stoking ethnic conflict all across the world. Different parties are stoking ethnic conflict. This won't go to help them. I don't know if they're doing it as part of a script or they're doing it part of a plan or you know, they're stoking a conflict between the Muslims. They're stoking ethnic conflict with cartoons against the Muslims. They're stoking ethnic conflict against the Mexicans. They're stoking ethnic conflict against the Africans. And white rabbits, of course, are coming into bear management mode. They're coming out a massive amount of negative conditioning, a massive amount of, you know, speckly rabbits are so wonderful, diversity is our strength, speckly rabbits are so sexy, and now they're done with it. We're coming into the phase, the standing up phase, the phase when it's over. Where it goes from there is, well, that should be the funny part. But, you know, I don't know what Mexico can really do. I guess their best option would be to, you know, I've thought that many skirmishes could start off this, but there are so many gun owners in America. But knowing the Taliban, he would probably let Mexico come in there and annihilate the Mexican army, come in there and annihilate the Arizonians if they could. I mean, if their military is even up to par on what they could really do. But this is the road they've taken, and they are stoking ethnic conflict in regards to South Africa, and we're coming into the 2010. This summer, there's a big World Cup in South Africa. Some say it's going to be a debacle. Others think it won't be quite a debacle simply because there's been so much foreign, there's so much foreign security in there, so much foreign security, competent security teams in there with the soccer teams. All these foreign football players that make 100 million euros a year coming in there to play soccer in South Africa, the crime capital, white rabbit genocide capital of the world. And so you're going to have all these people coming in South Africa. I don't know what the numbers would be like. I don't know what a debacle it is, but they've been stoking ethnic conflict against whites coming into it. So they're stoking ethnic conflict. All sides are across the board, especially the Obamas and his groups and the Mexicans. And the Mexicans are now starting to realize it ain't fun anymore. And the Africans don't know any better. The Africans will keep up until you slam them to the ground. And then once that's all over with, they'll have no comprehension of what's going on. You know, they have a very tough time. It's like Malema over in South Africa. He has a very tough time understanding why he can't sing a song about killing the Boer farmer when they're on genocide watch. You can't train these guys. They don't get it. And when they do get it, they're like whimpering children. Then they'll come back and want to do business again the next day. It's a very funny. Black rabbits, indigenous black rabbits of Africa, are very funny rabbits like that. They don't really have a concept of right or wrong. At least 90% of them don't. And that's one of the reasons they've got to be left on their own, and you know their populations then would moderate. But they are stoking ethnic conflict, especially in South Africa coming into this World Cup. And I don't know what's going to happen. It may not be as bad as a lot of people think, simply because of the amount of foreign security. But no one knows the true numbers of foreign security in there, or exactly what's going to go on. And of course, blacks have said they're going to rape, murder, and kill every white person they find coming in from Europe, and maybe they will. The problem will be illegal immigrants in South Africa much more than anyone, but the president of South Africa and all these different individuals in South Africa are really concerned because you have these out-of-control elements that can't be controlled. Again, they've been under propaganda for 15 to 20 years, saying that all their problems are due to apartheid, due to white people, due to the indigenous white rabbits of Europe that cause all these problems. They can't turn it off, right? It would take 15 to 20 years under a new South African system to even turn it off, to even neutralize it. They can't neutralize it. And since all these ethnic groups like the Mexicans in Ashland or the South African, the blacks that want land confiscation like Zimbabwe, these groups all have their own media, so it just reinforces stuff. You know, the Mexicans were told that all their problems are due to white people taking their land, and they gave them this big fantasy of Ashland. It is kind of a fascist fantasy for Mexican rabbits, and I'm going to go into that next. Under the brown shirts, all wear brown skin. But where this all ends up is anyone's guess, other than ethnic conflict. But it starts with white rabbits putting their foot down. It starts with a consistent message. And they are certainly stoking ethnic conflict and getting the indigenous white rabbits of Europe more and more angry. And most of them really don't realize it. It's just now that the Mexicans realize it. And just now that the political class in Washington and some of the different Anglo elites, especially Anglo-American elites, that this is out of control, that you have a rising white rabbit population that is very, very awake, becoming more and more awake. Of course, there's a consistent message out there. Many of them know that as well, of the Anglo-American elites. And they're not going to listen to you. And racism, the charge of racism, doesn't work, right? In your opinion, I'm racist. You're just saying, because I'm white, anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. And they do not know what to do about it. The process is out of control. And, of course, you have the black rabbits like Talibama, that are stoking problems. You have the Mexicans that these different Mexican groups that have been under this media, have their own media, and told all their problems are due to the white rabbits. And the white rabbits are going into bear management mode. Where this ends up is anyone's guess. But I have some ideals. And we'll keep on, let's see, one last news event. Sandra Bullock speaks about Jesse James' Nazi salute photo. And Sandra Bullock is now, Sandra Bullock is now pro-white genocide. She adopted an African-American baby boy. It's an African in America. We could see why Sandra would be upset that her husband, who she spent 4 years going through the adoption process, might actually be racist. What was interesting about this piece, this is Celeb Buzz, is that Sandra told People magazine that she was arranging for her newly adopted son to have a brie, a Jewish circumcision ceremony. So either Sandra is Jewish, making her son Jewish, or she's planning on converting to Judaism, while she remains a non-Jew, which is weird and probably not the case. I never knew Sandra Bullock was Jewish. She's supposedly not Jewish. But I guess if she is Jewish or a crypto-Jew, having Nazi Jesse on board is no go. I wonder how Jesse thought about her adopting some little African and American rabbit. But Sandra Bullock, you got all these undercover lovers among the Jews. I assume that most of Hollywood is, but maybe she's another one. She has to be something to have planning a brief for her little adopted son. It should be interesting to find out if she's really Jewish. I don't know why they all hide. It makes everyone more suspicious. The more they hide, the more suspicious people become. Hollywood is nothing but Jewish. And so we got ethnic conflict. In the next one, we're going into the brown shirts all wear brown skin, and we're going to talk about Hitler around the world, some different movements in South America, some different struggles. The only one that's really bad for white people, the only one that's caused damage is, of course, Mexico. The Mexican Aslanders, which think they're claiming some territory. And that's the only really one that's hostile toward whites. Many of the others are pretty much benign because they're not really around us, and they have no interest in being around us. But the Mexicans are out of control. And of course, we know that any time you brainwash a population, it takes a while to undo that. After all, it took a while for it to undo it with you, so it's going to take a while to undo it with Mexicans, and I'm not really optimistic about undoing it with Mexicans or black rabbits. The Mexican rabbits are black rabbits. But we're going to talk about the brown shirts all wear brown skin. Now we're heading into the brown shirts all wear brown skin. And in Arizona, in America, they've passed a law. The law is most certainly discriminating because it discriminates against anyone that doesn't have identification, and it profiles whether they say it or not. It profiles anyone who's basically Mexican, because that's the vast majority of illegal immigrants in Arizona. And the so-called conservatives are busy saying this involves racial profiling, and it does. You know, when the police describe someone as a Mexican male or a Latino looking male, they're profiling. They do it all the time. But of course, you know, they got into this problem in the 50s. Bob just wrote a piece on it on his blog. It's WhitakerOnline.org blog. It's on the front page of my website. And, you know, the piece, conservatives are yammering about this, but it is exactly what we predicted in the 50s. Once discrimination is banned, where do you stop? The answer is you don't. It becomes ridiculous. It becomes a circus. But into this circus, we have the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. And they have constantly been called racist, nonstop. You don't want to allow a bunch of brown people into your country? You don't want to allow a bunch of non-white rabbits into your rabbit hole? Well, you're a Nazi who's going to kill 6 million Jews. And this is nonstop. Nazi, Nazi, Nazi. Nazi who's going to kill 6 million Jews. And so the immigration reform of Arizona basically stops anyone that looks illegal or can look illegal. And it basically profiles it. I mean, you can pull them over and throw them out. And of course, this is spreading like wildfire. Other states want to get involved. And the Associated Press has released headlines, Obama takes immigration reform off the agenda. He doesn't want to vote on it. Why? Because it ain't going anywhere. White rabbits are very funny. What happens is the whole entire world starts taking advantage of them, and then they get to a point where they don't budge. And that point is the infamous Gates of Vienna. They've hit the Gates of Vienna. They did what the Muslims have done. They hit the Gates of Vienna on race. And this is a process to watch. And so what's happened is they've been totally desensitized to anything racial. It starts out that the indigenous white rabbits of Europe will actually believe that not letting in Mexicans will make them Nazis. They'll believe that. They'll believe anything. We are the magic rabbits. And then it's going to shift to the opposite end of the spectrum. All my life in America, I've heard if you don't do this immigration, you're a Nazi, you're a National Socialist. They're saying it again. Even the Catholic Church is saying the immigration bill in Arizona is Nazi. It is Adolf Hitler could have wrote it or something along those lines. Look it up. Immigration reform in Arizona is Nazi. and they're calling everyone who supported a Nazi. That's extremely dangerous, because white rabbits will believe it, just like they'll believe they're racist, and then it's going to boomerang on you, because for some reason, we condition backwards. Maybe the sun is out of place or something. Why do we condition? Are we prone to this type of conditioning? Well, why do your neighbors think they're racist, and why did your ancestors think they were evil sinners going to burn in hell? They will believe it, and then it will boomerang on you. And what we're seeing is the reversion to the mean, the boomerang. And no one's ever really seen quite like this at this time. And it is moving very quickly. All the different intelligence services are putting out, this is standard stuff, about social storms brewing. And this is one I'll read you from the Survival Center. The Survival Center kicks out a free international newsletter. All the stuff I read to you, you can get for free. But this is typical type of stuff everyone's seeing all across the planet about America. Social storms are brewing. We're not making this up. Americans across the boards are waking up and they're getting fed up. A new Pew Research Center survey finds a perfect storm of conditions associated with distrusted government, a dismal economy, an unhappy public, bitter partisan based backlash, and epic discontent with Congress and elected officials. And they talk about the potential for conflict. Well, what that really means is, in America, I've seen ethnic conflict my whole entire life. Well, what they're talking about is in the potential for ethnic conflict, or in the potential for conflict in America, what they're talking about is the potential of the indigenous white rabbits of Europe to be fed up and not put up with it anymore. They're not really talking about ethnic conflict when it comes to Mexicans kidnapping people in Phoenix. Yeah, there's all kinds of kidnappings going on in the Southwest. They're not talking about ethnic conflict in regards to drunk driving Mexicans mowing people over right and left. They're not talking about ethnic conflict like the rancher who just got shot the other day by illegal immigrants crossing the border into his farm illegally. What they're talking about when they talk about the potential for conflict is that potential for white rabbits to finally be fed up. It's kind of funny because there's all kinds of ethnic conflict. I've seen this my whole entire life. It's just now getting interesting because it looks like someone else is starting to get fed up. But into this whole process, post-World War II, we have this infamous figure. You might have heard his name, Adolf Hitler, and his group of Nazis who killed 6 million Jews. It's Nazis who killed 6 million Jews. Nazis who killed 6 million Jews. And this stuff has been played over and over again. And white rabbits bought into it. Europe has to be multiracial because we don't want Nazis. Well, that's pretty extreme. It's pretty extreme to associate a bill that simply enforces federal law. I mean, if you're in the country illegally, they're going to throw you out. They're not necessarily going to pull you over if you're minding your own business, but if you get pulled over and you're in here illegally, they're going to bounce you out. That's what they're doing in Arizona. That's just like any other country in the planet except white countries. White countries aren't allowed to do that because, well, if you do that, your Nazi is going to kill 6 million Jews. That's fine for a while, but what you're seeing is the boomerang. You're seeing, Victorian England. I use that example in 15. I talk about negative conditioning in Victorian England. White rabbits thought that sex was all prude. They were all prude and prim and proper on the outside. Next thing you know, there's a bunch of hanky-panky going around 150 years later. Well, this stuff is high speed. This thing has come full circle. And, they'll start out, grannies will support Mexican immigration because they think it's wonderful and they don't want to appear to be Nazis who are going to kill 6 million Jews. Now, all of a sudden, in Arizona, you're going to have grannies with swastikas. It's dangerous stuff. It's not what you want to do on white rabbits unless you're a Nazi. I've never really seen anything like it all lining up into this time frame for the big awakening that's happening among the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. But all around the world, by and large, the brown shirts all have brown skin. And they talk about this. This man won't die. Adolf Hitler. Yeah, he won't die. And it's a good example of hunting the ghost of the past. You never want to hunt the ghost of the past because it makes you delusional. You're not dealing with reality. You should recognize the past for what it is. Look for any pattern in your enemy's behavior and move it forward to who that enemy might be today. But the Jew rabbits got themselves caught hunting the ghost of Hitler past. They did, didn't they? They're hunting the ghost of Hitler past. I've talked before extensively about the Muslim rabbits. The Muslim rabbits are the ghost of Hitler present. But I didn't do it justice. And in this next little piece, I'm going to do it justice, and we're going to travel around the world. And I'm going to talk about Nazis in places you've never known there was Nazis. Ulaanbaatar. Ulaanbaatar is in Mongolia. In Mongolia, there are three National Socialist parties. Supposedly one or two of them are vying for political power, actual power, in Mongolia. Now, of course, they talk to these in Time magazine, or there's whole pieces been read about this, because these guys, I'm looking at them right now on pictures, and they got swastikas on their chest, tattooed. They have the blood swastika, the traditional red Nazi flag with the white circle and the swastika in motion. They have that in an actual tile in a bar. They have this is full out. This is full out. And what has happened is Hitler has become the archetype. And archetype is a funny word. I'm going to define it for you. In Jungian philosophy, in psychology, and it's a collectively inherited unconscious ideal pattern of thought image universally present in individual psyches. An archetype simply means a pattern or model. And he has become a model. Adolf Hitler and the Nazis have become a model for a variety of different groups around the world on a subconscious level. These groups that crave order, they crave getting foreigners out of their country. He's become the archetype for anyone looking to conquer territory. You know, you've got the only ones that are really hostile toward whites would be the La Raza. La Raza is definitely fascist. It is the Mexican groups. And they think they're conquering and taking back territory. Well, the Nazis said the same type of thing in regards to historic Prussia and whatnot. And Hitler become the archetype. Now, they don't openly say that, but they are fascist. They don't openly say that because that causes a problem, but La Raza itself means the race. And there's been this movement post-1950 in the non-whites, the indigenous white rabbits of Europe are all getting negatively conditioned because we don't condition under normal basis. We don't look at things normally for some reason. We don't look at things like other rabbits. It has something to do with race being real. But Hitler has become the archetype for anyone looking to conquer or anyone looking to kick out foreigners. In the Muslim world, he has become the archetype, the model for getting rid of the Jews. Believe it or not, he's their archetype. He's their model. And he's become the archetype for ethnic conflict, for solving ethnic conflict. Kick them out or kill them. It's very simple, but the brown shirts all like that. They like the power. They don't have the green goddess. They don't have our weapons and technology and all that type of stuff. So they worship power. And he has become the symbol in the black Hugo Boss suits and the Porsche tanks of power, of raw power and enforcing that, whether it be from a conquering standpoint or whether it be from putting order back in society. And in Ulaanbaatar, you have the same ingredients. You have China coming across the border and doing things in there, and so they immediately become Nazis. And what they're doing in Time magazine is telling them that, you know, Hitler wanted to kill any Mongols in Germany. And then they're saying, you know, well, that's in Germany. Hitler wouldn't have no problems with Mongols in Mongolia. He'd never killed any Mongolians here. It's kind of like the Arabs. They always say, you know, Hitler wanted to kill all these mixed race stuff or Arabs or thought Arabs inferior. Yeah, well, he only thought they shouldn't be in Germany. You know, they come back with actual, which is factual. He wasn't interested in taking over the planet, I don't believe. But they see things their way. He's become the archetype for dealing with all these problems. And the Mongolian neo-Nazis, what they call neo-Nazis, are a wild group because there's three different groups. And they're all vying for power. And they are heavy-duty nationalists. And they've put out different warnings on it. And I'll read one online on some website, newnation.vg. know where the, who actually wrote this, but it says, whether nationalism spreads to the extent it did 80 years ago remains to be seen. Yet even if racial hatred grows to a small percentage of what occurred in Germany under the rule of Hitler, that in itself is a frightening concept. Unfortunately, in the spat of graffiti, the rise of racial attacks, or the general public's opinion of their southern neighbor, which is China, they're speaking about Mongolia in this case, is a measure of racial intolerance. A small percentage mark has already been surpassed. Slow as the bubbling may seem, if the government organizations, the public, international companies, and the naivety of those who broadcast the rhetoric begin to believe their own propaganda, what began as a slow simmer may eventually begin to boil. What the Nazis have been accused of is spreading this stuff far and wide. This delusional concept of, there's a good example in La Raza. La Raza and the Mexicans believe that they can have this utopia if they take back their land. And this takes very many different forms, but we've seen the same thing work with the communists. You know, Freud thought that the Jews would lead the brown world against the evil white rabbits. Well, what's happened is the ghost of Mein Fuhrer has led the brown world against the Jew rabbits and the Anglo elites. And that's really what's happened. They don't want their New World Order. They're interested in their own space. But this thing takes on many different forms. Communism didn't really take on many different forms. International communism didn't. The other type did, maybe. But this is more like a tribal thing where everyone wants order in their own particular playground. They want their own stuff, their own way, and they don't really care. They openly accept that white rabbits are great at what they do, but they're all aligning themselves with this stuff. And it is far and wide. September 11, 2001, you know, you got the Evo Morales. And Evo Morales is a South American, and he's the head of Bolivia. It didn't ring a bell there for a second, but he's the head of Bolivia. And I remember when he was at Harvard, or maybe it was Yale, was some uppity East Coast institution. He said he was an indigenous fascist. He didn't have a problem with that. That's a good example of when it was first spotted. Now, this was maybe 2003 or something along those lines, but that's what they are, indigenous fascists, we'll call it. And it's been fascinating to watch them cling on to Hitler as an archetype for whatever they want to do, whether it's conquer old territory, or whether it's get rid of foreigners you dislike, whether it's to enforce law and order. That's the way it's went. And there's been several pieces done on this, and they're starting pretty much right after September 11, 2001, they started doing all these studies. And they noticed that the brown shirts all have brown skin. Well, white rabbits are pretty nice, easy going. They always were. But all the people that idolize Nazism on a huge scale, Muslims would be the largest group, but there's all these other factions too. In South America, the Frontline World series from A Small Planet on PBS, that's pbs.org, here in America, did the Chile, the new Nazis. Hitler's unlikely followers. Chile once harbored Nazi fugitives and has a history of racial discrimination, but its predominantly mixed race population makes it an unexpected home for a neo-Nazi movement. And he goes through this, and I would advise you, if you're interested in how this stuff is taken globally, watch the particular leaders of this. Now, of course, many believe that there are certain Nazi elements alive on the planet that's pushed this stuff in South America. I think it's pretty much a fact that they translated certain documents or helped the Muslim world get a hold of stuff. But it's pretty much like taking candy carrots to a rabbit. They're going to eat it. And this young man in this particular PBS special, you can watch it online, Chile the New Nazis, pbs.org, he's talking about how he craves the law and order. He wants a respectful society. Now, he's clearly mixed. And they've been accused of having whites in charge run things. You know, you got a handful of whites can run a whole big groups like this across South America. The whole truth behind who's running it, I don't know. This thing has a mind of its own. I don't really buy that there were that many Nazis in Mongolia. This stuff has a mind of its own. And watch it. I don't think there's anything. I think these young people have legitimate concerns, whether they're mixed race or not. And there are, of course, quite a few whites in South America that are also they're also bent toward National Socialism, young whites. But most of the mixed crowd that call themselves these skinheads or neo-Nazis in South America, crave the law and order. They crave the, you know, there's something about it. Hitler becomes the archetype for solving all their problems. And this has been something phenomenal. Instead of it being communism, it is now National Socialism. And this thing has taken a mind of its own. There is no way out of it. Of course, white rabbits don't see things that way, but they will eventually. If in Arizona, if they keep on saying you're a Nazi who's going to kill 6 million Jews just because you want immigration reform, they'll resign themselves to, okay, so what? No problem. You know, it's kind of like in Great Britain, they've had old World War II veterans that go on record saying, we didn't go to World War II for this. You know, they regret going into World War II or fighting against the evil Nazis, because look at what these people have done to our homeland, the leaders of the Anglo elites in London in this case. They're already starting to subconsciously get the feedback going. They're basically thinking out loud. Many of them are thinking out loud what they've been thinking on the inside, that, you know, we went to war so we could have a mulatto president in World War II. You don't want to sit there and call white rabbits Nazis for not wanting immigration and all kinds of, you want to balance things. This is not the approach you want to take unless you're a Nazi. But this stuff has taken a mind of its own. We got the boomerang going with the white rabbits, and the brown world, you know, they're wearing the brown shirts. The special on chilling the new Nazis says it all. You could do one of these on all kinds of different countries of the planet right now. The stuff on Mongolia is funny because they said, you know, Hitler probably put you to death in Germany. Well, that's no big deal. We're not Germans. You know, they got Nazi-themed pubs everywhere. They got all kinds of stuff going on around the world. And I'm going to read for you a current piece, and it's one of the better pieces I've seen on this global thing. Actually, I'm going to read two to you. I'm going to read one to you completely. It made McLean's in Canada. And the piece is called The Return of Hitler, The Troubling Resurgence of His Ideals and Manifesto Mein Kampf. And it was by Kathy Engelhardt. And it's called The Return of Hitler, and it's from McLean's in Canada. On April 30th, 1945, Adolf Hitler took his own life with a simultaneous bite into a cyanide pill and gunshot to the temple. The day before, he dictated his will from a dank confines of Führerbunker, a concrete shelter buried some 8 meters below the old Reich Chancellery, as Soviet forces encircled Berlin. What exactly happened next is fiercely contested. Excuse me. But by most accounts, the bodies of Hitler and his wife Eva Braun were carried upstairs to the garden by SS devotees, doused in gasoline and burned to pieces, then buried and later unearthed, and then buried again in an unknown location or perhaps just scattered to the wind. And let me interject in case I forget. Shark Hunters, they're releasing a new edition of the diary about the Hitler's escape from the bunker. They published a book called Escape from a Bunker by a spy that's pretty much been verified as a spy for the Nazis. They're going to be releasing a new edition this summer, before I forget to tell you, with all kinds of government documents in it. These are U.S. government documents. I don't know if they're going to release German government documents, but they have two more books coming on the subject, which is interesting in itself. Now I'll continue reading. Almost 65 years later to the day, the man and the totalitarian regime he established continue to fascinate us. In just the last few years, Mein Kampf, that's My Struggle, Hitler's poorly written 700-page magnum opus, turgid, verbose, shapeless, to borrow from Winston Churchill, has earned bestseller status in some likely markets. India, Turkey, the Palestinian territories. His paintings are fetching record-setting prices and trading anything the Third Reich leader touched or might have touched is thriving. In some cases, the fascination is trivial, even absurd, such as the Nazi chic clothing that has been popular in Asia, t-shirts with Hitler portraits and swastikas. In other words, though, it is more pernicious. The 65 years that have passed since Hitler's death have not dulled the allure of the Führer or his ideology for the now burgeoning extreme right. Take the lead into last Sunday's national election in Hungary, which saw the far-right Jobbik. The Jobbik Movement for a Better Hungary rake in 16.7% of the national vote. In just a few years, Jobbik has grown from almost nothing, winning over a disenchanted electorate with its stark anti-Semitic and anti-Roma rhetoric. Party officials have been careful to dismiss any direct links to Nazism. Anti-Semitism is masked in attacks on Israeli visitors, and hatred of the Roma is justified with talk of gypsy crime. both like the gypsies don't commit crime. That's me interjecting. But members of Jobbik's paramilitary wing, the Hungarian Guard, have not been so cautious. Neither have been its supporters, who gathered at the Danube River last week to lash out at Jewish pigs and to unite in common cry against foreigners on Hungarian soil. They should leave. Jobbik's leaders now have at the helm of opposition, the opposition are ready to take the country forward away from all that commotion over the Holocaust. Hasnain Kazem, a journalist of Pakistani Indian origin who is based in Islamabad, shies away from revealing where he's born, Germany. But it's hard to avoid. Kazem says people in Pakistan jump at any opportunity to talk with someone from Germany. They say, wow, cool, so you're in favor of Hitler. It's even worse, he says, when his family came to visit him in Pakistan's bustling capital, the embarrassment might begin on the busy drive home from the airport. You'll find cars with Deutschkreuz, the German cross, basically. You'll find people with stickers on their cars saying, I like Nazis, I like Hitlers. And then there's the banter. People start talking about Hitler in a friendly way, Kazem explains. Even though the people aren't Nazis, he said the Nazi imagery is ubiquitous in Pakistan's large city. It took some time away and then a move back to Islamabad 8 months ago for it to really resonate. I only realized how many people like Hitler. And that is in Pakistan, and I'll interject. This stuff is huge internationally. The average little Nazi or members of the small has no idea the appeal of this stuff internationally. It is huge. It has a mind of its own. I'm going to continue reading. Jonathan Solomon, a lawyer in Mumbai, says the same revelation struck him when he was browsing for books. He sounds Jewish. I was shocked to see Mein Kampf is available in Indian bookstores, even in the prestigious bookstores. It was not 10 years ago. Moreover, pirated copies of the book in the country were a 22-year ban on the Salman Rushdie satanic verses has still to be lifted, are available at street stalls. It sells very well, says PM Shenvi, manager of Strand Bookstall in Mumbai. Today, publishers continue to churn out multiple reprints of Mein Kampf. A year to meet R.H. Sharma, an editor at Mumbai's Jayco Publishing House, insists is a surging demand. In 2009, we sold 10,000 copies over a six-month period in our Delhi shops, Sharma boasted. Perhaps Solomon should not have been taken aback. In 2002, an English language Times of India published a report showing that Indian college students found much to admire in the Fuhrer, namely his efficiency, military strength, and nationalism. The newspaper asked 400 elite college students, who's your favorite leader from history? Hitler came third, just behind Mahatma Gandhi, because he made Germany a superpower, was one student's response. This is in India. Hitler came in third. Of course, it's not just India where Mein Kampf is topping the charts. In 2001, it became a hot item after being introduced in Bulgaria. And he goes on to say this. I mean, and this is quite an article. It is 4 pages long, and I don't want to read you the whole thing because it says over and over again the same stuff. And of course, after that, it goes into. And after that, it goes into Turkey. And in Turkey, it says the flourishing Islamic movement has spurred interest in Hitler and Mein Kampf. It is Islamists rather than the fascists who fuel the sales. Mein Kampf sales in 2005 by printing the book in large numbers and driving its market price down to $3. It came as a huge reaction against the war in Iraq and Israel's action in Palestine. It is funny, and of course Europeans don't know what to do with it, and this stuff has a mind of its own, and Hitler won't die. There are white nationalists that would like to see Hitler die. There are lots of white people that would like to see Hitler die, but Hitler will not die. And this article is a must read, and they go into the SPLC and what they think about it. You know, and they try to ban different things. Germany's upset because Mein Kampf is selling so well in Turkey. So, of course, they sell it just to say up yours to the Europeans. In China, Mein Kampf is forbidden except for research purposes and exists only in special libraries. Also is the case in Brazil. I guess Mein Kampf is still illegal in some countries. The state's rights to Mein Kampf will expire. Well, they're saying in 2015, Germany... the state's rights to Mein Kampf will expire, and the book will enter public domain. Once Bavaria's copyright expires, warned state science minister Wolfgang Hubisch, In February, there's a danger of charlatans and neo-Nazis appropriating this infamous book for themselves. Yeah, it won't no longer have a copyright. But the state of the current world economy is also fueling the trend. When the Berlin Wall fell in 1989, says Annette Tim, professor of European history at the University of Calgary, those Germans who joined up with neo-Nazis were the ones who fell through the cracks after reunification and needed something to identify with. Today, Tim says, it is again down and out and looking for something to feel passionate about. It's not surprising that support for Austria's Freedom Party is high among those with high school degrees. Without high school degrees, or that in Hungary, one of Europe's most suffering markets, a Nazi-inspired party, is faring so well. Evans stresses that this can happen because Nazism adapts and changes to present-day circumstances. I thought communism was supposed to do that. Rather than featuring thuggish skinheads, the far right now runs young, good-looking white men, like Hungary's Vaughn and Austria's Strasch. Hungary's Vona and Austria's Strasch. In most cases, it is not exactly time to panic. Evans says that in spite of some gains, neo-Nazism still remains to a great extent on the fringe of society, but he still finds it all worrying given today's mass unemployment and recession. In the 1930s, when people voted for Nazis, they were voting out of protest. Now, not necessarily because they supported the whole ideological package. We all know the results of that voting. I guess they don't like voting. When National Socialists start getting elected, they don't like voting. Communists are okay, though. But this brown shirts all wear brown skin. In reality, the white countries are way behind the times. And this idea that they're only these ideals only appeal to stupid people without degrees or without high school diplomas is something they traditionally push in places like America, the stereotype they traditionally push in somewhere like America or anywhere else, and that's far from true. The ideal that Hitler only is supported by the poor Islamist or the poor stupid Pakistanis or the poor stupid Indians in India is very, very dumb. It's not based on any reality. This stuff has a mind of its own. And the brown shirts, of course, are all wearing brown skins. The white countries are not even anywhere close to catching up with them yet. Although they could all once, I guess. And then I'm going to talk about the last piece I'm going to talk about. But when it comes to the Evo Morales talking about being an indigenous fascist, when it comes to what's happened in different South American countries or what's going on in Asia, Adolf Hitler won't die. The Jew rabbits got caught fighting the ghost of Hitler past in the white countries. By fighting the ghost of Hitler past in the white countries, you end up negatively conditioning the white rabbits. Hitting them on the nose every time they don't like immigration, they don't like something, calling them Nazis who are going to kill 6 million Jews is the last thing in the world you want to do, unless you're a Nazi. They should have been fighting it in the brown world. Now, those policies will work in the brown world. They won't work on white rabbits. They're totally upside down and backwards. You just can't win. But a billion Muslims are ready to fight them by proxy. So they don't need Mein Fuhrer. But that's a good example of what happens when you fight the ghosts of the past. Well, you have some ghost of Hitler present knock their heads off. You can't do anything with these people. Now, let's say that, you know, a handful of Jews migrate to Mongolia. Well, guess who's going to oppose them? Guess who's going to be vocally oppose them? You know, you'd have to run your game and try to get speech laws in place. Well, that ain't going to work. That just reinforces things. And these groups will fight. Muslims will fight them to the death. Times Online. That's timesonline.co.uk. They run a great piece. This was on March 26th, but this is typical. You'd think this Frank Skinner guy listened to my show. On the Fuhrer channel, baddie gets just desserts. Stalin and Bin Laden simply don't cut it. Only one man dominates the TV schedules. Yeah, look this one up. On the Fuhrer channel, baddie, B-A-D-D-I-E, gets just desserts. I stayed in my own the other night. I put on some slightly ripe lounging clothes, got my feet on the coffee table, and began tantalizing running my index finger up and down the television remote control. Many British middle-aged men reading this will think they know what's coming next. A night in with complete control of the remote. They'd do what lots of other British middlemen would do. They'd scour the satellite television channels for Adolf Hitler documentaries. This is a bit like looking for hay in a haystack. It's often possible to plan the whole evening around the Fuhrer. I had a quick look at the listings. There was a documentary about his final days. another about his attitude into the Channel Isles, another about the Night of the Long Knives, and so it went. I'm amazed that someone hasn't polarized this phenomenon and come up with the Hitler Channel. Then you no longer have to water down the content by including programs about Elizabeth I or the invention of the hovercraft. It would be Adolf all the way. For some reason, it seems, British men of a certain age can't get enough of him. He's their Lady Gaga. One can imagine them laughing scornfully at their teenage kids pointing out that Gaga's not the first celebrity to wear crazy outfits and suffer undermining speculation about testicles. I used to occasionally make reference during my stand-up comedy act to age-old pensioners constantly wittering on about the Second World War. I eventually came to realize that, though this was true during my childhood, it's no longer the case. Nowadays, pensioners writing witter on about the Beatles. However, the glut of Hitler docs is slowly reversing this trend, and tomorrow's pensioners will be wittering on about the Second World War again. Well, Hitler mainly. The press have the Hitler bug, too. And this past week, I've seen stories about Hitler's attitude to cricket. Cricket being the sport, of course. Me interjecting. About his student drawings and about a letter from him to a British journalist was sold for $8,000. The reader's comments on the online version of the latter article all talked about what a fantastic bargain it was. It was Hitler mania, for goodness sakes. So what's going on? There's a general fascination with bad guys. Just take a look at any amount of true crime books there are in the average bookshop. A bad man is like a bad relationship, intrinsically more interesting than a good one. It's why we look for warts on our heroes, anything to convince us that good doesn't have to be completely equate with dull. It's why the malevolent Richard III gets a whole play to himself, but the squeaky clean Henry VII has to settle for a bit part. But why don't other iconic bad men get the coverage Hitler does? I did read this week that the Moscow authorities are thinking of putting up Joseph Stalin posters as part of their Victory Day celebrations. But this seemed to be regarded as a minor piece of news compared to the revelation that Hitler thought cricket pads were unnecessary. Way to go, Joe. Osama bin Laden had a period of being a byword for evil, but when did you last see an article about him in the paper? He's not even suitable for Where Are They Now? One can almost imagine bin Laden cropping up on the next series of Dancing on Ice. I reckon Jason Gardner will still get the most booze. Bin Laden was a flash in the pan. Hitler's been around longer than Cliff Richard. He's the Peter Pan of evil. That's pretty good. He's the Peter Pan of evil. Is it the old Nazi chic thing that draws people in? I remember when lounge singer Brian Ferry got into trouble for saying that the Nazis really knew how to present themselves. People will still go for that shaved head, black leather boots, long coat look. It's a grim irony for the Germans, whose darkest days of their history just happen to coincide with the only time they've ever been regarded as well-dressed. It may seem horrible to think that people could overlook the horrors of Nazism for the sake of what they perceive to be cool look, but I'd rather they were drawn in by the style than the ideology, better with the fashion than the fascism. However, I like to believe that the fascination with Hitler comes generally from a better place than that. The difference between him and Stalin or bin Laden is that Hitler was properly defeated. He's a one-man morality play. He was evil in what seems to be clear-cut and uncomplicated way, and he also got a proper comeuppance, dead on the concrete floor in the arms of an Alsatian. Well, I suppose technically in the legs of an Alsatian. Perhaps the knowledge that he ultimately failed was beaten in war that seems at this distance more obviously justifiable and more than most recent wars make him a reassuring example of what happens to bad men in the end, or what we wished happened to them. There's a lot of true crime stuff on Satellite 2, and inevitably also tends to be about bad men who get caught and punished. I think people, admittedly, maybe subconsciously, are tuning in for reassurance, not macabre fast titillation. And it's an interesting piece, but he's dead wrong. This guy won't die. Mr. Skinner, I suggest you read this piece. On the Führer Channel, baddie gets just desserts. Frank Skinner, this thing won't die. He won't die. What happens if he didn't die like they say he died? And Frank Skinner would have to know because his papers published the stuff. You know, there's stuff coming out on him, more stuff this summer. They're releasing government documents every month on his whereabouts after the war. They're doing all kinds of stuff. This guy won't die. Everyone wants him to die. All the whites want him to die. The indigenous white rabbis of Europe want him to go away because they blame him for all the immigration they've had to suffer. But at the same time, he won't die. And now you're seeing the boomerang effect. And you can't get him off the TV. So what's really going on? What's really going on with Hitler? We won't know the whole story. I don't know how history is going to view it. It's not going to be what you see is what you get. And the history has certainly not been written yet. But in the next piece, we're going to title the piece going into Nazi Never Never Land. I'm gonna go into Nazi Never Never Land. I'm gonna tell you what exactly they were doing. They told you what they were doing, but no one really believed them, because what they said was so outrageous and no one really understood. But I'm going to lay out in what Dr. Farrell is telling you in his books that these guys are doing. I have several listeners that have now read the books, and they've read the footnotes, and they've asked him questions, and they come to the conclusion of what these guys did and may have done. And I'm going to go out there. We're going to Nazi Never Never Land. And that's a rabbit hole. Once you go down and understand what they're doing, you understand why they won't die. It may not be that easy to kill them. And we will do this in the next one, and then I'm going to talk about how these different topics are showed up in the popular media. And I'm going to do some media stuff again, more entertainment value. And all those that have asked questions about the Sumerian text, about the gods of Babylon, I will answer all your questions, all the questions you ask. I have many good questions because the topics I'm covering have really not been covered from this angle in a long, long time. So I got all kinds of questions from all kinds of different listeners, and I will answer them all. And will be one of the most unique MP3s ever put out on the web, I guarantee you that. And I'm going to put it all together for you. For those that haven't read all Dr. Farrell's books, or don't have time to read them, or don't have time to look at the footnotes, I'll tell you what these guys were really doing, what they were looking to do. And I'll even tell you what I'm looking to see if they did what they say they did. But Hitler is someone that said he was going to do everything. He said, I'm going to take a steel broom to the Jews. He did. He said a lot of other crazy stuff, and he may have done it all. According to Dr. Farrell, he did. He would definitely get the credit for it. But the only thing we know to be true is that this guy won't die. He won't die in the non-white world. He won't die in the white. The whites can't get, you can't get him off the TV. But this is a funny book. Funny story. And of course, we got new information coming out every month. We're not talking hearsay information like they were releasing 20 years ago. We're talking government documents, FBI documents, OSS documents. OSS was a predecessor to the CIA in America. We got stuff, and this guy will not die. The ghost of Hitler present. But that's a good lesson on why you don't want to get caught fighting the ghost your ancestors fought, because you might have a present day ghost to fight. But how do you fight a ghost? How do you fight this? If you're a little Jew rabbit, what do? The ADL put on a big dog and pony show in Washington and say they need to do more to crack down on anti-Semitism worldwide. What can they do? And we'll go into that in the next one. We're going to go into Nazi Never Never Land, the rabbit hole that everyone's heard about, but no one's ever went down fully. I'm going to go down it on MP3. Nazi Never Never Land. And I'm going to tell you, I will finish up, I'll tell you what that bell thing does, what they were looking to do, and what I will be looking for, because I keep things simple. You got to remember that Horace the Avenger is a skeptic. I'm a skeptic, so I got to see things before I really buy into it. But what I'll be looking for, if in fact they did it. And I caught candy carrots. You know, we don't need candy carrots to win, but if we get them, they're yummy. We don't need any help. We have a consistent message, and white rabbits can do everything on their own. We can actually do that. We can do amazing things in a handful of years. But getting carrot candy is good. The Green Goddess may end up giving us a bunch of carrot candy, candied carrots, as I say. But to understand those candied carrots, to understand what they were doing, we got to go in this rabbit hole, Nazi Never Never Land, and I will go back into that in the next two. I'll be back with you. Until then, thank you for listening to this episode, another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. We are now at the end of another episode of Horace the Avenger's Follow the White Rabbit. And this podcast is, of course, all, as always, dedicated to practical politics. But I'd like to take this time to thank you for tuning in to another episode. On behalf of the Indigenous White Rabbits of Europe, it is yours truly, Horace the Avenger. And I'll be back with you in another episode in the near future. Until then, thank you for listening.